The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Billen in the hizzy.
Yes.
Good over there, man?
Yeah, man.
Good.
Where'd that first hour go?
Excited for...
Time flies when you're screwing up music facts, you know?
Time flies when you're telling trivia questions and having them answered.
Poor Will. We tried to make that transition to baseball. I could not be the only person who could see it so clearly in his eyes. Worst poker face ever. Will's brain was completely still stuck on that trivia question.
Oh, listen to that. By the way, the trivia question for those who missed it was, what current NFL head coach of the 32 had more career rushing yards than did Bo Jackson in his NFL playing career? Simple as that. Tweet said there is a short on NFL Films, he says, I believe, where they asked John Harbaugh that exact same question, and no, he didn't guess it, and it's awesome.
Oh, that's great.
Imagine that. His own brother couldn't figure out the answer to the question. Bruce Dobigan, regarding the secret LeBron presser in Miami, I'm reminded of the old expression that three people can keep a secret so long as two of them are dead. Yeah, but they all deny it. Let's see. Dan Groeschel, last July, I won betting the Jays most wins, but my Brewers almost mucked it up at the end. This July, I hold a Sox ticket at 60-1, and my Brewers are threatening to muck it up, rooting for my team to lose so a bet on another team can win. Ah, the joys of betting. Yeah, that's how it happens, man. So we're all about that. Three Jacques, H3131. Gil, still no love for my girlfriend, Paula Badosa. Speaking of love, I can't stop this feeling. Ooga chaka, ooga chaka. No, I hate Paula Badosa right now. And I hate her because, again, this is one of those... First of all, she walked off the court when we were up 6-4 for love the other day on a big dog in Maya Sharif. Now, we cash that at some books, but for our record keeping, we go with the old school grading, which is no, it must complete, right? So at some books, at the old school books, we just got a refund. So I hate her that she just walked off the court. She wouldn't let Maya Sharif have the proper title winning match of a tournament, and it cost us some cash, right? What would have been winnings. Then today... not only does she beat our dog Katarzyna Kawa, who was 0-9 on break points in the first set, Kawa was 1-13 on break points for the match. And it's just ridiculous that we end up losing that, right? Now we're involved in she's doing this during country clubbing, but now we're involved in a match where our girl Alina Karaeva is 6-15 on breaks, where her opponent Sinja Kraus is 7-7. It's just one of those days, man. One of them days. We'll see if we can't get Karaeva home. By the way, Rinderknecht is a loss. Kawa is a loss. We are up a set in Molkan. We are in a third set with Karaeva. She's trying to break back to make it 1-1. And Buruchaga is now going to a third set, the +210 dog. So far, so not so good is, I believe, how I would characterize that. This is primetime Leon Sanders. Yo, hey man, as long as Country Cub and K. Michael Bidlin is belting out jams, how about a little commercial music to lead into Country Clubbing? Straight down the middle. Try keeping that one out of your head now. I've done all I can do. Peace and love. We are not allowed. What's the story? We're not allowed to use licensed music, Kelly. Is that the deal?
We don't want to do that. Correct, because of, I don't know. I won't say who, but I think I know who. If we were just on radio.
Oh.
We were just on radio.
Okay. Kevin Ryan, Gil, Aaron Rodgers is loathed by many for his yearly playing with everybody by delaying his decision on whether he's coming back. How is what national anthem dealing LeBron James doing? That's it. That's any different. Oh, it's not. It's not different at all. They're both. It's both, how can I put this? Annoying.
Yes.
But Aaron Rodgers is more public facing about it. So it's slightly more annoying because he's more public in terms of getting interviewed during the process, I guess. But your point is correct. I hate both of this stuff. No one likes this, right, Kelly?
No, not at all. Who annoys you more? That's a good question. Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, okay. I mean, me too.
Aaron Rodgers.
It's not even really close.
Yeah. Because Aaron Rodgers is on McAfee all the time. Giving opinions on all kinds of subjects that he apparently and only he is expert on. So yeah, he's clearly more annoying. But you know, no one likes to see this. Like LeBron, just pick a team already, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
So, by the way, Chris Foster, Why don't you ask him who he finds more annoying between Rodgers and LeBron James? He loves LeBron.
Between LeBron James and anybody, the answer is anybody is anybody. More annoying than LeBron James.
That's exactly right. Okay, let's do some real country clubbing, shall we? We have music for this. Let's go. Oh, yeah.
What you don't realize since you've been gone is that I've been monitoring the crew to see if they're if mm-hmm. I'm still getting the same amount of love as we would normally get with the glow sticks. They've been doing they've been doing a great job. Did Danny kind of have to lead the way today? That's what it looked like back there, but they've been doing a great job. They're still keeping it up.
I respect that. Mm-hmm. I respect that. So now I usually ask you this before a major, right? I usually say, do you kind of ratchet back the betting the week before a major because you just don't know, you know, if some of these guys who are like close to the cut kind of just pack it in so they can get prepared for the major the next week. After the major, though, there's no such thing as like a letdown in golf, is there?
Not really, because you've got, a lot of the big, it's still good. It's a good question because you we're going back to the States, right? We're going back to the States. Here for the 3M Open, and you've got now this is the part where everybody rips apart the PGA Tour schedule. I kind of like how this is what it's turned into for the closing stretch. Like, you have the British Open, okay, and we come back to the US, and you got three regular season events left that are kind of the final sprint to either get into the FedEx Cup playoffs or improve your positioning in the FedEx Cup playoffs. And guess what? None of them are signature. And if you feel like you're good, you're one of the big names and you like where you're at in the FedEx Cup rankings, Gil, like, you don't have to play a single one of these. So it really kind of, it like, the field this week is interesting because Scottie Scheffler is in it, who I guess Scottie Scheffler is just very mad that he's not winning more golf tournaments and wants to pick on easier fields or something, because he's good, right? But then he needs a win. Right, but you're not really going to see a lot of the other bigger names. It's these kind of mid-level guys and outside of that top 70 that are really fighting to get in the top 70 or improve their position there. So it's, you know, Scheffler plus 260 this week at DraftKings. Then you drop all the way down to a Kurt Kitayama at a little over 22-1. He won this event last year. Maverick McNealy a little over 23-1. And then it's Hideki 28, Tom Kim 29-1.
What was that Kurt Kitayama stat? We did a trivia question earlier. What was that Kurt Kitayama one that we had?
Wasn't he the part of the group that had made the cut at every major this year?
I think
that's what you're talking about.
A very small group of players. Dude, now, would you have known? He was there, and Brennan was there as well.
I could have told you Michael Brennan. That's one of those lists, right? If you told me to guess, and I don't even know how many names there ended up being, like 15, something like that. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I don't know. I probably would have been able to name half of them. And Kurt Kitayama, he's a very good player. No, I would not have. He's not one of the first names that would have jumped in my mind of who would have made every cut at each major this year.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to derail you, but here it is. Golfers that have made all four cuts in the majors this year: Sam Burns, Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Rory McIlroy, Cam Young, Ludwig Ober, Colin Morikawa, Chris Goddard, Justin Thomas, Ben Griffin, Hideki Matsuyama, Corey Connors, Kurt Kitayama, and Michael Brennan.
Those last four, there's no way I would have guessed. There's no way I would have guessed. Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed. Hideki Matsuyama's had a terrible season by his standards. I actually would not have guessed that he'd made the cut at every major. Actually, that leads us well into this week, though, because this is, as far as the big names that are playing in this, like, Hideki's one of those guys where you start looking down this odds board, and it's like, man, of guys that I am confident that can go win golf tournaments, Hideki Matsuyama is high up there in just my internal rankings on that, right? But he has really struggled this year. It's an interesting betting tournament that we have with Scheffler in this field, because it is one of these tournaments that sets up perfectly for his skill set too. I love this tournament every year. It's in a neighborhood. You're going to see a lot of houses, which a lot of people don't like kind of in the golf world. But they designed this, I think, perfectly. This started in 2019, this event. I believe that was the first year. Yeah, 2019. And they let the tournament designers let everybody know right off the bat, like, they don't want this to be the toughest tournament on the PGA Tour. They want it to be fun, though. So there is water everywhere. You've got water that comes into play in true danger threats on nine different holes, 13 holes. Water comes into play very much like the Honda Classic off the tee and on approach. You're going to have to deal with water everywhere. It is the 10th longest course on the PGA Tour. So you have seen a lot of bombers win here over time. Kurt Kitayama, Johnny Vegas, Tony Finau, Cameron Champ, Matthew Wolf, all bombers off the tee that have won here in the past at longer odds. I really thought that's the direction that I would be going this week, Gil. But, you know, we talk about this all the time. We run our numbers. We're baking that in. I'm weighing distance and ball speed very heavily, and it always kind of intrigues me when you get some shorter guys that end up at the top. So I actually, the only long guy I ended up playing was Johnny Kiefer, still one of the younger kids on tour, 70-1. I played him at. He's one of the bigger hitters. Max Homa, I guess, a little bit more down the middle, but you don't think of him as a big hitter. I love Homa this week. I think he is quietly starting to finally put it together this year. He was T28 at the Open last week, T39 at the ISCO before that, second at the John Deere Classic where I hit on Goddard up a few weeks ago. Really stringing together some quality finishes and has played well at this course. Does have a T3 finish here back in 2020. So went Homa, Johnny Kiefer, Ben Coles in the outright market, which I felt bad for because this is who Wes and Matt lost on a few weeks ago when I hit on Goddard up. And then Tom Kim, man, didn't make the cut at the Open, but the approach play continues to be very good from him. I'm going to roll him back. So Tom Kim, Max Homa, Johnny Kiefer, Ben Coles all this week. Homa, the one I like the most, the only guy that I bet in the top 20 market as well.
Let's go Max Homa.
Yeah.
Let's do it for the people.
That's right.
And you know which people I'm talking about.
Oh, I know.
All right, Paul Spohr, baseball. Let's do it next on A Numbers Game right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The Circus Survivor documentary is back for another season, and this one's bigger than ever. 7 all-new episodes kick off every Wednesday, starting tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern. Episode 1 takes you inside the growth of the most electrifying contest in sports betting, now with $18.7 million on the line and a massive new Grandissimo format, raising the stakes even higher. Follow the sharp minds and bold personalities who think they've got what it takes to go the distance. Whether you play Circus Survivor yourself or just love the drama of a season-long grind, it's much a must-watch TV, I should say. Check it out tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, and then every Wednesday night moving forward, the 7-episode run covering Circus Survivor contest from last year and Circa Grandissimo from last year. Kelly, I know I'm in it for 10 seconds at the top tonight, and that'll do it. Wrapped
nice,
it up.
Nice. That's it. Where's the premiere party at tonight? That's what I want to know.
Oh, that's a good question.
Matt Brown's house? Probably Matt Brown's house. That's where everybody's
Matt Brown's house.
Yeah. I'm sure.
I guess we didn't get invited.
Everybody's invited, Gil. Everybody. Hop on a plane after the show.
Everybody's invited. This gentleman had his career boosted by the great Bill Simmons. It's Paul Spohr, everybody, from his lair somewhere in Austin, Texas. You can follow him on Twitter at Spohr. He is the host of the Sleeper in the Bus podcast, does all his stuff at FanGraphs. Paulie, can you give us that story back in the day?
Don't lead with that. God. Yes, that is true. He found the SP guide, which you did too. And he mentioned it on the pod, but he mentioned it. Like, I don't even share the clip anymore. First off, I've moved on from Bill. Loved him in his heyday. I will not deny that and try to rewrite history. Not a fan of present day Bill. But also the person that he was on the podcast with is a renowned piece of human garbage. So I can't even really share the clip in good conscience anymore. Known dirtbag Jonah Carey. I'll say his name because F that guy and everyone should know he's a piece of human garbage. But anyway.
Yeah.
You made a comment about Cowherd in the break in relation to Bill, and I said, throwing stones from a glass house there.
That's right. Because I was telling a story about how Coward told Russillo once, I like Bill, but why does he have to be a bully? And Paul was like, oh, he's a bully too.
The irony, right? Like, I mean, come on, dude. But anyway.
Yeah.
Nevertheless.
Anyway.
I do owe a little bit of debt there because him mentioning the SB guide on that podcast
for sure
was a huge deal for me, without a doubt.
Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely it was, because he was huge even at the time, despite who his guest was on that show. We all had that guest for a while. Yes, we did.
He had us all fooled, man. He really did. Go ahead.
Bro. Okay, let's get to modern day baseball. We're back from the break. Mm-hmm. First of all, do you enjoy the home run derby and the all-star game? Do you still get a boyish love from those events?
Yes and no. I got a real problem with it being on Netflix, though. A real, real, real problem with paywalling the home run derby. Absolutely disgusting. I was lucky that I was at my sister's watching their dog, and they have Netflix. Not a chance in the world I would have bought Netflix just for that. Not only is it just ridiculous that it's paywalled by having to sign up for Netflix, but it also sucks, right? The production sucks. But the event was great. So it succeeded in spite of the production around it. Excellent combatants, you know, Jordan Walker rising up, beating Philly, Schwarber on Philly's home turf was great. Schwarber is awesome, and he takes that in stride. He wanted to win, but he certainly appreciated the greatness of that whole showing there. So the players made it good, as they often will or won't. The event itself, again, being on Netflix, massive, massive problems with that.
Yeah, I Jordan Walker had to hit six straight to win it. It was
so cool.
Awesome. If you had a bet on it, like those of us who followed Mark Borchardt did, it was awesome. And Vasgersian, our buddy, he threw in pre-flop. Did you hear that, Kelly?
I did. NA
Boy, he had a pre-flop shout in there. Love that.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love Vasgersian. It was just, it was an odd collection of people. I hear you, Paul. Yeah. And I had Schwarber. How'd that work out? That didn't work out well? Cool.
So close.
You can get
so
a win close. Place show like horse races there, so you get second place.
Six in a row. Good times.
So crazy. So Paul, famous. Pardon me. Famously, here I have the Red Sox 80-1 most wins in July, looking pretty good. But I also followed it up today by saying, listen, I think they are the greatest example of a team that, okay, once July ends, schedule gets harder. They got injuries. We don't have a timetable for Crochet and Anthony, most famously. I feel like they're a team that is just going to be on the fringe at the end. And if they could squeak in to the postseason, I think they're actually going to be a really hard out. And I love the way they're set up. Do you agree with that? Or is there another team in baseball, either American League or National League, which people sort of thinking about futures should actually look at and say, okay, this is an even better example of a team that we don't know if they're getting there, but if they do get in, God help everybody else.
I mean, no, I think the Red Sox are that team right now. And obviously they've played themselves back into the mix so much. They were a team I had a really hard time kind of putting that nail in the coffin of, because they were my number one seed pre-flop, if you will. You know, I had them as the AL number one seed. I really, really liked this team. I was like, why are they the worst team I've ever seen? This is insane. But, you know, you start piling it up months at a time here, and you're like, well, how do they get back? This is how they get back. But you can't predict that for anybody, that they're going to have a 14-game win streak or a 14-1 in 15-game type of run. You just cannot. So it was hard to see the way back for them. But now that they're here, they're back in the mix. Not every game is a game seven. My Tigers are still in that mode where every game is a game seven. So Fromber going 2/3 yesterday and not only tanking his outing, but then ruining the bullpen for today, yesterday and today, is a huge problem. Because I think my Tigers could also be that team that is dangerous if they get in, because they have, you know, they have a legit ace. They have supplemental guys behind Skubal, and they have a lineup that can be dangerous. But they got to get in, and they have to get to that 500 mark first before you really start there. But it is this Red Sox team that, like I said, from day one, I thought they were great. I did waver. I'm not going to pretend that I stuck by them the entire time. I thought there was a moment where I was like, okay, they just suck. They had a bad year. We move on. But now here they are fully in the mix, and I'm with you, especially if Crochet comes back. Remember, they're doing this without Crochet entirely. If he comes back, that is one of the premium aces in the game. That sends him up to another level. And you have to think, well, you shouldn't assume anything with Breslow, smartest man in the room, but you got to think that they're going to go out and make some moves to supplement too. So, you know, I'm kind of curious to see what they do there at the deadline.
Well, that, I mean, that's the other question, right? So we're 12 days away from the deadline, August 3rd, trade deadline, which, I mean, the American League alone, do you have any sense of who's a buyer or seller at this point? Because even like the Astros, who won a couple games in a row, now I'm like, this is all it takes, right? If they just go on a little streak themselves, they're not selling, right?
They shouldn't be selling until the last second. Three teams, Angels, Royals, Athletics. Those are the only three right now that you can say they should be selling. I think we maybe need to start looking at Toronto. The fact that they made the World Series last year, it's tough. I understand to then turn around and sell, but they're on a lose three. They're a negative 61 run diff. I don't know that they can convince themselves. I know some people think I'm a delusional Tigers fan, and I get that. You know, there's a little bit of fandom there, but they're also a plus run differential and have been for a lot of this year, which is a premier indicator. Like, it's one of the steadiest indicators you can get. So if you want to say that an under 500 team has a shot there, they're the only ones doing that in the AL. All the other ones are a negative run differential, and that makes more sense that they have bigger issues in front of them. So I think the Jays are really on that borderline, another few losses in a row, and I think they need to start looking at selling off some pieces, not burning it to the ground and rebuilding, of course, because they made the World Series last year, but I think they could be sellers. And then in the NL, you got the Rockies, the Giants, and I think the Mets obviously have to pack it into. The Mets, you know, despite as bad as they've played, they could facilitate multiple bullpen trades that could fundamentally turn bullpens around across the league. They do have a lot of really, really interesting relievers. They got Freddy Peralta, who I know just got crushed again, but I wonder if there's some Mets malaise there that if he got out, got with a new team, could get revitalized. Because I don't really know why Freddy Peralta sucks so much. He's been terrible, though. I cannot pretend he hasn't been, but I'm not sure that he's cooked. And I do wonder sometimes if the malaise of being on an awful team, how that affects guys. We don't know, right? Unless they come out and say, yeah, I was in a bad headspace. I went out there and I was just kind of plugging away my four or five innings and being done. Unless we hear them say that, we don't know. But I am speculating that there is some of that with Peralta. And if he got out of there, could he really jumpstart a team as well?
All right. If I spot you, Braves, Phillies, Brewers, Cubs, and Dodgers as five of the six NL playoff teams. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams within two games of each other for the final wildcard berth. Pirates, Diamondbacks, Cardinals, Marlins, Nationals, and yes, the San Diego Padres. Who gets it?
Yeah. Boy, you know, the real answer is, of course, we have to see how the deadline goes, but I'll make an answer right now, and I'm going to go with the Pirates. I really do think that they have the juice to do it. This offense is really good. They kill righties. They've been doing that all year, but now they're jumping up against lefties. They used to be kind of a lefty-righty thing where a lot of their strength came from the left side, so they weren't as good. The magic man, as Merlin Valdez has given them a premium batting on the right side. Brian Reynolds, of course, is a switch hitter. So it's mitigated the need of O'Hearn and Spencer Horwitz, who's on the shelf right now, and Brandon Lau to be great against lefties as three lefties themselves. So I'm going to go with the Pirates. They have an ace. Skeens looked better last time out. They need better bullpen, but that's what they can go and buy without going too far all in as far as chips. So I like the Pirates.
I know we're a football country, but baseball, man, is so great this time of year. Can't wait for the home stretch. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Paul Spohr, everybody, right here on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Don't forget, our guide is out and is done, been out, as the kids say. I believe the kids say that, Kelly. Our VSiN NFL betting guide, specifically, whether you're betting futures, win totals, division races, MVP, Rookie of the Year, Super Bowl odds, our guide helps you get ahead of the market before training camps begin. Inside, you'll find breakdowns of all 32 teams, projected win totals, best bets from VSiN experts, future analysis, power ratings, and more. Get it today with our football special for just $175. The sooner you sign up, the more value you get with full access to everything we do across every sport. Through the Super Bowl, that includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Man, it's nothing. You know, I was saying to Paul just moments ago, I'm still one of these guys that loves baseball. But let's face it, now that the World Cup is behind us, we all like talking football again, our football. We talked NFC East yesterday, Kelly. Let's talk a little NFC North, shall we?
Let's do it, man.
Would you like to?
The best division in football? Should we start with that question? Is this the best division in the NFL to you this upcoming season?
Top to bottom?
Yeah.
It's easy to say yes. Mm. It's easy to say yes. But that thing I said about the Vikings to Will, I really have that. And by the way, they highlighted this in Aaron Schatz's FTN Football Almanac. We had Aaron on the other day. Essentially, with the Vikings are 8.5. Their season win total is 8.5.
Let's start with them because I think that is an interesting conversation.
Yeah, J.J. McCarthy, just again, the brief history in case you forgot it, misses his first year, right, with the knee injury. Then last year he comes out, very first week, you remember he has three horrific quarters against the Bears, and then all of a sudden goes 6 of 8 in the fourth quarter and wins NFC Player of the Week. That's how it started. Unfortunately for the Vikings, the rest of the way he was more like the first three quarters, not the fourth quarter. And then he had all the injuries, right? We talk about all the Jaden Daniels injuries, but he missed 5 games early in the season with an ankle injury. He missed a week with a concussion. He missed a week with a hand injury. And it's a problem for a guy who, remember his college career, Kelly, he had a grand total of 713 pass attempts in his entire college career. And that again, after he missed his entire rookie season with a meniscus injury suffered in the first preseason games. Among 50 quarterbacks drafted in the first round since the current rookie wage scale was created in 2011, only Paxton Lynch and Trey Lance had fewer pass attempts than McCarthy through their first two seasons, which is why they bring in Kyler Murray, because McCarthy, by the way, last year finished with the worst non-Cleveland Brown starting quarterback DVOA.
He sucked.
The NFL. He sucked.
And then he had the Brosmer. The Max Brosmer.
Also, right, their GM, who's no longer their GM, he got fired, Kwesi Odofo-Mensah, his four-year draft, he had 4 years to draft, so he was there with four NFL drafts. Only four players are expected to start this year for the Vikings in all four of those draft classes, from all four of those draft classes. So they didn't draft well. And by the way, like Dallas Turner is kind of a rotational player that's now going to start because Jonathan Greenard is gone. So anyway, all that is the bad. So Kyler Murray comes in, and I was mentioning this with Will. If this is to be the best division in football, and if the Vikings are to be either the best last place team or actually not even a last place team, you're going to have to get Kyler Murray from 2021 or 2024. 2021, he finished 7th in passing DVOA and 3rd in accuracy rate. And then when he was fully healthy again in 2024, because he wasn't in between, Murray finished 12th in passing DVOA with an 11.9% DVOA, just below the great Sam Darnold season when he was with the Vikings until it wasn't at the very end.
Yep.
So people forget, like, Kyler Murray, you have an impression of him, and yes, there's probably a ceiling, but there's also a floor, right, where he's actually pretty good. And a very serviceable, I'm actually doing him an injustice by saying a very serviceable quarterback. He's actually borderline top 10 in those years. And now he's got Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and Juwan Jennings. Kelly, he's never had receivers like that.
Never.
So that's right. And then the other part, though, that I was saying to Will is the part we assume, though, right, is that Brian Flores can put together a top 3 defense every year. Mm-hmm. And I just worry, and they did talk about this in the Almanac, you just worry if that's something you can just slot in. Because even if Murray is good, but if the defense falls to like middling, then they're kind of the same team ultimately again, right? So you have to, the only scenario where they end up being a playoff team is Murray's 2021 or 24, Kyler Murray, and Flores can still put together an elite defense.
So I think it's great points by you, and really not a whole lot else I feel like I need to add on here. Because the losses on the defense are real, and I think that is a very fair question and maybe the toughest test for Brian Flores of his career this year, right? Or one of the tougher ones. I'm with you. There's probably too much assuming going on out there. But I think where the offense and specifically the quarterback play was at last year was so bad. I think the way that I look at it, Gil, is, okay, maybe you're right, or what you're saying is right, or it's in between what Drew said yesterday. Remember, Drew had him as in one of these as those top 6 defenses in the NFL heading into this year. He thought that brought the Vikings to a certain floor, a very high floor. Okay, maybe they're not that good. But if they're a top half, top third defense, and Kyler Murray, which I believe he can, boost that offense up to at least a middle-of-the-pack offense, then yeah, I think then this team becomes dangerous. I don't know if we need to go to the extremes that you're talking about. Like, I don't think Kyler Murray needs to have his best season ever for this to be a very good football team. The problem is, if he doesn't, then you're talking about what does the rest of the division look like and how much movement can they really make against those other teams.
The other thing that was pointed out. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I know we brought this up a couple weeks ago with the Vikings. I'm very high on the Vikings, too. And I think for the most of these, a lot of these NFC divisions, I'm looking at them very, very similarly to Will of like, man, it would be further down the board, dog or nothing. I think for me, this will be nothing heading into the season. The schedule note I made, though, they start Packers, Bears, Bucks. I think there is a win total opportunity to jump in after those three games and play the over. And guess it gives you a few games, too, to check out how Kyler looks, how this team, how the defense looks with all these changes. I think that's the way I'm going to approach Minnesota this year.
Yeah, the other sort of points I'll just sort of give highlights because I read all the, extensive in Aaron Schatz's almanac. The Packers, one of the things, and this is it's funny because our brains don't necessarily process it this way. If the NFL didn't add the seventh playoff position, we think of the Packers completely differently than we do. The last 3 years, they've been the seventh seed, right? And they actually won a playoff game, right, before as well as a seventh seed. But if that seed doesn't exist, Matt LaFleur probably is fired already, right? They don't make the playoffs. They have all these disappointments. So the Packers are kind of that team. Now, they had a lot of injuries too, most famously Micah Parsons, but also Jordan Love. Micah Parsons is not supposed to be there the first week of the season. He's going to be on the PUP list, probably physically unable to perform. So they're going to start the season that way. So they lost Wicks and Dubs, Romeo Dobbs, pardon me, Wicks and Dobbs, but they still have Watson. And Golden is probably better than we perceive him because when he was actually on the field, he was actually pretty good. So they still have that. Jaden Reed is still there. So they're still kind of that team where there's still enough question marks, but they're good enough when they're fully healthy to be a playoff contender for sure.
Bunch of wide receiver number twos that can't stay healthy though, man. Like I don't try. I take all that out. I actually think the Packers have the highest floor in this division. And I don't even know I think it's all that close. But you brought up, I got no trust in the ceiling. I think you could easily make arguments for the Bears and Lions have higher ceilings. I think what we've seen and what you just brought up about the Packers bowing out early in the playoffs, I think that we're probably looking at a similar season this year.
Well, and just really, skating into the playoffs or just barely getting into the playoffs is really the biggest thing. The Bears, we talked a little bit about that with Aaron earlier in the week, which is the offense is going to be awesome. But good God, the defense could be atrocious. And their model really hates the Bears' defense because the Bears had two things going for them that is not sustainable. One, the way that they recovered fumbles. I think it was 10 of 14 opponent fumbles last year. Recovering fumbles is not a repeatable skill. Mm-hmm. And yet the Bears have lived off this for a couple years. And then they also had this thing where they were really bad on first and second down defensively last year, but then all of a sudden got good on third and fourth down. Well, first and second down performance is much more predictive in the future. So as good as the Bears offense could be again, and remember the Bears won a lot of games in miraculous fashion. So maybe we shouldn't even assume that. They do feel like this perennial over team for bettors where it's going to be like, oh my God, this team could give up so many points this year. But Caleb Williams is going to be on the field. Caleb Williams is definitely going to be the first Chicago Bear quarterback with over 4,000 yards passing this year, finally. Because if for no other reason, that offense is going to be on the field a lot.
Yep, so, I agree. Made a bet.
You did.
Bears
there you
over
go.
415.5 points scored.
We didn't even plan that. Coming back on a numbers game, we'll resume the NFL.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Circa Resort Casino, downtown Las Vegas. When it comes to Kelly Bidlin, I am still in San Francisco, Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Let's see. This is from TDG, Totally Driven. No respect for KO and what he's done with the Vikings when he's had a healthy quarterback for the season. At least there's no Dobbs, Mullins, and Hall this year. I didn't say I don't have respect for him. I'm just saying for any team in any sport, you need things to break right. And that's the Viking scenario for things to go right. Mm-hmm. Everything we talked about.
I think I will be higher on the Vikings overall, but Kyler Murray and this offense than most, Gil. And I'm glad you brought up some of the good things that he has done in the past, because I think that often gets forgotten with him. But I think it is very fair what you brought up about the defense. Like, I'm kind of a believer that, Flores is going to be able to figure this out, but there's more questions than people are willing to admit on that front, I think.
For sure. For sure. Scotty, Leisure Suit Kobe, how could that Miami Heat YouTube situation be a coincidence? Isn't this the biggest giveaway in recent memory, meaning betting LeBron next team as Miami should be, as they say, a suitcase bet? What bigger sign could they give us?
No.
Leisure Suit Kobe, I am not confident about any of that.
No. And this is, look, for a lot of people out there, I'm not saying it doesn't mean that. I'm not saying it does, Gil, right? But I'm actually glad we got another tweet about this. You might work for a company that does a lot of social media stuff, and you are aware of this, and you might work for somewhere that doesn't do a lot of this stuff, and you don't know about this. Here at VEASAN, I can tell you, we have videos scheduled days in advance, for slots in advance. This is something that you can do, and that you do all the time on different social media platforms, including YouTube, where you plan stuff out weeks, months in advance. So we were talking about it for a second. I'm just saying there's a real possibility that this is something that they were just getting ahead of and preparing for in case he signed for them.
Yeah. Most famously in broadcasting, the biggest example of what you're talking about is these news organizations have obituary packages prepared for like celebrities or dignitaries who are in their 80s. Right. So that's like the most cynical of all that stuff. I don't know if he has an opinion on LeBron, but I'm guessing he does. Nick Whalen, co-host of Prop Points, who follows us here at every day, Monday through Friday on the network, joins us now. You can follow Nick on Twitter at Whalen, but just substitute the number one for the L. Nick, good morning. What's your take on all of this, sir?
Well, we are going on, week three now of LeBron watch. And if you've been following the prediction markets, good luck. I actually tweeted out a graphic earlier this morning, tracking all the movement at Kalshi over the last 3 weeks. And, on any given day, there was a stretch where it looked like the Warriors were the favorite. And then everything was leaning toward the Cleveland Cavaliers. And now after YouTube gate last night, it feels like it might be the Miami Heat. But I'm with Kelly. I think this could just be a video department preparing for something. I would not overreact necessarily to this news. But overall, guys, what's fascinating about this is there's not a perfect fit out there to me for LeBron. When he went back to the Cavs in 2014, that felt like, okay, it makes sense. They had just got the number one pick. They were able to trade for Kevin Love. Kyrie is coming into his own. And obviously you had the return narrative. But every single one of these possibilities, whether it's Golden State, Cleveland, Miami, Philly, if you want to throw Minnesota in there, I think there are holes you can poke in the case. I guess LeBron going back to Miami, doing the return 2.0 from a narrative perspective, it's interesting, but I don't know if I love the fit of LeBron alongside Bam Adebayo and Giannis Antetokounmpo, two guys, by the way, who are much younger than him and he has no connection with, right? It's different than teaming up with your friends, which was a big part of the narrative in Miami. And then, of course, even a stronger narrative going back to his true home in Cleveland. So I thought it was interesting, guys, a couple of weeks ago, where I think it was Rich Paul said, it would be the Knicks if they didn't win the title. That would have been the most fun landing spot to me. LeBron swooping in and delivering, or at least attempting to deliver the Knicks their first title.
Oh, it's a good call. Yeah. Unfortunately, in the words of Sugar Ray Leonard, the first time when he said he was, flirting with fighting Marvin Hagler, but didn't, he goes, unfortunately, it will never happen. We'll never know the answer to that question. All right. You do have, Nick, though, a whole bunch, a handful of NBA season win totals for us. I know this gets Kelly's juices flowing.
I love the July win totals. Let's go.
Let's start with the team that is lined at the lowest season win total. You have an over on the Chicago, not in fully in the market, but in the case of your bets, the Chicago Bulls, you like them over 24.5.
I do. I do. Yeah, we have a whole gaggle of win totals, a murder of win totals. I don't know what the appropriate term is when you have five early win totals that you've already played. But I do love the Chicago Bulls over 24.5. I think this is a little bit of a disrespectful number, to be honest. I know the Bulls have some depth issues, and that's really where this could be a problem. But I think this is the best starting five that the Bulls will be sending out in a long time, with Josh Giddey, Norman Powell, Matas Bezelis, Caleb Wilson, who we feel even better about now than we did 2 weeks ago, and then Nick Claxton, who I thought they completely stole away from the Brooklyn Nets. And I know Claxton's value has tanked a little bit over the last couple of years, but I'm willing to chalk that up to just being a member of the Nets, being sucked into this quote-unquote rebuild, essentially just tanking the last couple of years. They were basically playing him 25, 26 minutes per game. I think he's a much better player than he's shown the last couple of years, and he's going to a Bulls team that basically did not have a true NBA caliber starting center for half of last season. And look, if we want to count Vooch in the first half, that's great. He's not the player that he once was. So I think Chicago is a team that could push for 30 plus wins. I thought this was one of the more surprising opening numbers on the board.
Yeah, I like this one, Nick. I might not be with you on every other one of yours, but I definitely heavy lean to the Bulls over. This was one I considered as well. I think that starting lineup, right? In Bouzelis, there's a lot of faith in him still developing into something special. I think you nailed it. Depth definitely an issue, but man, 24.5 and third to last on the win totals in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, I like the over there too.
I'll say it because I feel obligated to. Let's hope Caleb Wilson improves on his 3 of 13 free throw shooting from Summer League, though. There is that
concerning
little bugaboo. Dallas, 34.5. Which way are you going on the Mavs?
So the Mavs are another over for me. A little bit of a trickier number, but the first thing I'll say about this is when you start to examine the Western Conference, you know, I think there's this reflexive idea that, oh, it's the West, it's going to be really tough to win games in the Western Conference. I think for the first time in a while, you could argue that the East might be just as deep, if not deeper, 1 through 15 than the West is. You know, I have Dallas, you know, firmly ahead of teams like the Clippers, the Pelicans, the Kings, the Grizzlies, maybe the Warriors, depending on what they do with the rest of their offseason, maybe the Suns, maybe the Blazers. Those teams are in the low 40s as far as their win total. I don't think there's a ton of separation between Phoenix and Portland and this Dallas team. So first and foremost, you're getting Kyrie Irving back. I mean, this is a team that basically, again, as we talked about with the center position in Chicago, did not really have a competent NBA point guard last year. They tried Flag early on. That did not work out. They had Brandon Williams, Ryan Nemhard. They're playing Max Christie out of position. Even if you only get 55 or 60 games out of Kyrie Irving, that's still a massive, massive boost. I think it makes the roster make a lot more sense. And I like some of the depth here. I like the front court. You had Merez Johnson, Santi Aldama, to PJ Washington, Derek Lively, Daniel Gafford up front. And then, of course, you expect to see a big leap from Cooper Flagg, who was excellent down the stretch, averaged 25, 7, and 5 on 46% shooting over his final 25 games. The Mavs, to me, guys, I would not be surprised if this is a team that's making a play-in push in the West.
All right. We don't know if LeBron's going to end up there or not, but you've got the over on the Cleveland Cavaliers at 48.5.
I do. And a little bit of an uncomfortable number at 48.5. But I do think even if LeBron does not sign with the Cavaliers, this is going to be a very good regular season team. And I think the way that their year has ended each of the last two seasons, it's been on a sour note. You know, they went out with all those injuries 2 years ago. They end up, you know, just letting that series go after what should have been a game one win against the Knicks. But the Cavs are constructed to win regular season games. You know, they're big four of Allen, Mobley, Mitchell, and Harden. These guys all play. They don't have injury histories. You know, you could kind of chalk them in for 68 to 75 games, which is huge in the current NBA. And this is a team that has a ton of depth. You know, even some of the moves they made at the deadline to improve their 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 spots on that roster. I'm not saying as currently constructed, I'm taking the Cavs to win the Eastern Conference. I think there is a ceiling on this team, but guys, Donovan Mitchell, whatever team he's been on, whether it's been Utah or Cleveland, has got to at least 48 wins in 6 straight seasons. He's just one of those guys who gives you a high floor. And obviously there is a little bit of meat on this bone. If LeBron were to join the Cavaliers, we'd see this number pushed into the low 50s.
All right. We have a minute left, Nick. 3 overs just now. Cleanse the palate, if you would, with a couple unders for us.
Yeah, we don't need to spend too much time on these. New Orleans, 27.5. That's just an auto under for me. I know there is some talent on this roster, but this is, you know, they're right there with the Sacramento Kings, who I also like the under on at 22 and a half in terms of just what are we doing? Like, what is the direction of the organization? I think it's very possible New Orleans could trade Trey Murphy either before the season or sometime mid-year, which would, of course, make them a worse team. And then the under 22 and a half on Sacramento, if they're just going to turn things over to Darius Acuff, that's great. You know, maybe that pushes him into the rookie of the year mix. I don't know if he's going to get to 40% shooting. I don't know what they're doing with Domantas Sabonis. I think this is going to be a long, long season for the Sacramento Kings. And both of those teams, there just aren't going to be any free wins on the schedule.
Nick, always appreciate it. We'll wait for you about an hour from now, prop points at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, guys.
Nick Whalen, everybody. Toddy Wishnev on the other side. Wishnev Wednesdays on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.